You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_daddy. So today we're just going to roll with some news and notesy stuff whenever I do those, little series dealies. There usually is a bit of a pile of things going on that I'm not super addressing. No, I'm not talking about Robert Kraft. That is not football related as far as I'm concerned. Which is definitely not Packers related. So I'm sure you formed your own opinion on that. Congratulations. But we're going to bring up a couple of other things not that related. I do want to start with the NFL Combine, because technically that does start today, even though we don't get to see any of the cool, flashy things going on, which kind of makes me sick, because it's like, oh yeah, the guys show up today. It's like, are they doing anything? Oh no, that's not for several days. They're just going to show up and, like, you know, say how you doing and measure hands for like five people, and then they're just going to go to the hotel room and eat ice cream or something. It's like, come on, can they just do like a push-up, just one? I need, just give me something, man. Let me see Jonah Williams do a jumping jack. Come on, man. Anything. But the cool thing about it, and it is starting to fire up a little bit, the prospects are showing up, which means the teams are already there. You got the teams, you got the coaches, you got the GMs, you got the scouting staff. And then on top of that, you've got the news media. So whenever you get the news media, that's just as hungry, if not more hungry than we are for information, because their livelihood literally depends on it, which is why we get some silly stuff sometimes where they barely overhear something, which is actually nothing, and then they make it a national story, which ends up being not true. But you do end up getting some stuff that's going on. You get people talking, you get scouts talking that people overhear, you get coaches talking, you get GMs talking, sometimes on the record, sometimes off the record, sometimes they overhear it. Like, what was it the one year? I think one of the Packers scouts had talked to, I think it was Corey Clement, and told him we might be taking as many as, like, three running backs. That was the year that we took Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. So I was like, oh, we're going to be taking some running backs, huh? Turns out that was the case. These guys aren't too worried about people overhearing their conversations, so cool stuff should be happening like that. Beyond that, though, when you get GMs and things in close proximity, you start to have some talks about some potential trade things with Antonio Brown and whatnot. So you're going to have the Ian Rappaports of the world who are going to have their ear to the ground. Not literally, they're just going to have people text them because he's built a gigantic web of, like, NFL spies. I don't know. I don't know how he does what he does. He's incredible. But as soon as somebody has a discussion about a trade, they're going to tattle on themselves to Ian Rappaport. So I'm hoping relatively soon. I know it's day one. Nothing really super crazy is going on. You know, it's not like people are going to flood into a building and be like, I want to trade this. Not like the New York Stock Exchange, where they're like flapping their hands around with those pieces of paper pretending. Which, by the way, what are they doing? Is that an act? Is that all fake? Because that doesn't make any sense. There's no way that's actually a thing and things are actually happening that way. That a sophisticated nation in 2019 handles its financial affairs with monkeys flapping their arms around with pieces of paper on it. I don't know, maybe that was just in the 80s and they don't do that anymore, but I still think that's weird. And I still think that was fake. Like, who are you talking to? And what are you communicating? How do they hear you? I don't know. Anyways, I don't actually want to know if somebody's thinking about explaining it to me. I'm just saying, it's just look dumb. But anyways, hopefully we're going to have some information flowing in. And beyond that, it's going to be awesome for the draft, because similar to the Senior Bowl, probably even more so, we're going to see an absolute upturning of these big boards. You're going to have some guys that just completely fall off because of terrible performances. You're going to have some guys flying up the boards, which then you get my favorite part of this whole process, when you have some people who have been saying something completely different for a long time pretend they've been saying something the whole time, like, oh yes, I've always known so-and-so was a first-rounder. Similar to Jaire Alexander. Jaire was a second-round guy all year long. He was mid-second, early-second, whatever. Mike Mayock comes out, because he comes out with like one mock draft or one big board or whatever it was, real late in the process, and he's like, Jaire Alexander is my CB1, and then everybody jumps out and they're like, oh yes, I've always known Jaire was number one. That's what I've always said, right, Mike? That's how you know somebody's fake. Like, dude, if Jair was your CB4 all year and then Mike Mayock says CB1 and you say CB1 literally within 24 hours, you're a phony. Just an FYI. But anyway, speaking of trades and whatnot, I had a thought. As far as Antonio Brown and the Steelers, there's some talk they want to get him out of the AFC, put him into the NFC. I think they should rethink that. A good pairing that a lot of people have been talking about is Le'Veon Bell to the Jets. They've got a lot of money. They don't have literally any weapons or offensive line to help their quarterback that they just drafted because the Jets are dumb and feel like, you know what, the best solution is going to be is to draft a quarterback that's going to need some developing and we'll drop him in the middle of a nightmare and ruin him as a human being. But maybe they smarten up and get some help so they get a guy like Le'Veon Bell. I think the best thing that they could possibly do, I'm talking about the Steelers now, is to trade Antonio Brown to the Jets so that the Jets have Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. Now, beyond my own selfish desire to keep Antonio Brown out of the NFC, I think the Steelers, rather than getting rid of Antonio Brown, should use him as a weapon to try to destroy the Patriots. Everybody knows the Steelers don't like the Patriots. The Steelers have been, you know, kind of this number two team in the AFC for a long time, right? They're always trying to talk about being big and bad and all this stuff, but the Patriots just smack them around all the time, and nobody ever has a chance in the AFC because of the Patriots, and the Steelers just can never beat the Patriots. So why don't you try to sabotage the Patriots? Do us all a favor and try to sabotage them. And I'm not saying that's going to be good enough, but Sam Darnold, coming up into his second year with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, is a pretty good start. And by the way, they've got the number 3 overall pick, which maybe they trade back to get an offensive lineman, maybe possibly, or maybe they stay there and just get a stud, somebody they can use to destroy the Patriots. Actually, I think trading back makes the most sense. I think Arizona, unless they trade out, is taking Quinnen Williams. I'm fairly certain of that. They're switching to a 3-4 defensive scheme, so they're not going to take Nick Bosa, I don't think. You can take Nick Bosa and tell him to be a stand-up outside linebacker, but there's nothing about Nick Bosa that says, hey, he'd be a really good outside linebacker, right? You don't want to drop him into coverage. He's never done that. He's not built for that. You put his hand in the dirt, and you use his explosion off the line to get behind people, through people, around people, whatever. Take Quinnen Williams. So at number 2, it could not be any more obvious. The 49ers would love nothing more than Nick Bosa, and they will get Nick Bosa, so there you go. But the Jets, who do the Jets want? I don't think Josh Allen's good enough to be a number 3. I think that's silly. I know everybody thinks that. I think that's silly. And yes, what I mean by that is if the Jets decide they don't want anybody at 3 and try to trade back, I absolutely don't want the Packers to trade up to 3 to get Josh Allen. I don't think he's worth that. I think that's crazy. I think if we're talking about giving up both of our first-round picks and then some for Josh, no way in the world am I doing that. Not doing it for Allen, for Bottom line is, I don't like anybody at 3. Just some kind of general draft talk, but basically you've got two guys that are just studs, and then it's like, meh. So unless there's an offensive lineman that knocks everybody's socks off at the combine, which hopefully happens, I don't think anybody really makes sense. I do have Jonah Williams still at 5 on my big board, even though nobody wants to admit that he's that good. Obviously, the folks with the big boards out there still really like him. In fact, he's moving up the boards. He just leapfrogged Cleveland Farrell, who I think he needs to fall even further, but we'll see. But anyways, getting back to the original thought, I can't help but talk about the draft a little bit. The Jets don't have a second-round pick, so trade back, acquire a second-round pick, get an offensive playmaker, get an offensive lineman, whatever. And yeah, all this so that you can beat the Patriots once? I'm here for it, man. I'm all for that. Just split with them. And they have so much money, man. The Jets right now, as far as cap space, have $102 million to spend. 102? How is that a thing? If they ended up paying $30 million for Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell this year, they still have $72 million. If they don't walk away from this thing with an upgraded defense, you know, primarily at cornerback, even though I know you got Tremaine Johnson, whatever, that was $12 million, you got plenty more. Spend another $10 million at corner, you got $62 million. Then you can go around and upgrade your entire offensive line. At $10 million apiece, you still got $10 million left over. There's no... just... ooh, Jets, I swear. $102 million. If you can't beat the Patriots twice this year, you are just horrible at football. You can buy literally every stud that's out there. Whoever the biggest pass rush threat is, just go pay for him. $22 million? Sure, why not? Barely even puts a dent in anything. Get that, get Le'Veon Bell, get Antonio Brown, get, like, you know, 3 offensive linemen, a couple tackles, and a guard. then draft a bunch of people, and you should win the division. It's that simple. It literally is that simple. If you can't win the division with that, you're just never going to until Bill Belichick leaves. You just conceded that. Because the amount of talent you have would be so far beyond the Patriots' talent, it's a joke. I really want the Jets to just absolutely go all in. And even if all in just means just please get into the playoffs. Please win the division. The Patriots will probably win the Super Bowl anyways, even as a wild card. I just want to see them get a wild card. Just one time I want them to be the wild card. Anybody, please, please do something. Ever. Please. By the way, the Buffalo Bills also have $70 million. Miami only has $9 million. They're going to cut everybody anyways, but it doesn't matter. They're dumb. Robert Quinn's going bye-bye. Tannehill's going bye-bye. By the end of this, maybe they'll have 40. I don't know. It doesn't matter. They're going to be garbage. But Buffalo and the Jets, man. Think about it. If they can just be good enough to beat the Patriots end up with 4 losses next year. And yes, that's what the NFL has become to me. I want the Packers to win. I want the Patriots to lose. Because it's basically the NFL now is the Patriots versus everybody. The Patriots automatically win the Super Bowl. It's just a matter of can we stop the Patriots? Because that's goal number one. Keep the Patriots from winning the Super Bowl. And then number two is see if your team can actually take their spot. But nobody wins if the Patriots are allowed to win. So, yeah, Buffalo and the Jets, please, please. Combined $190-ish million. Can we please try to gather up some talent? Who can we give them? Can we just give them Jimmy Graham? Like, do you need a tight end that's, subpar? I'll give you one. Just take him. We don't want him. I don't care. If he's good for, like, 2 touchdowns, I don't care. Just take him. I don't like that I'm like this. I don't want to be this bitter toward the Patriots, but it's just, what else am I supposed to do? They keep winning over and over and over and over and over, which is made relatively easy because they are in the AFC East. Not that they're a good team, or a bad team, because they're not. They are very good. But when you basically have 5 automatic wins minus the 1 fluky Dolphins loss every year, that's pretty awesome. I mean, literally every year you're guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. And usually you get a bye week every year. Meaning you just have to win a handful of games and you win a Super Bowl again. Isn't that nice? And you're in the AFC, which means you've got a couple teams trying to be up-and-comers every year. Like the Baltimore Ravens trying to be something, the Chiefs trying to be something even though they can never win in the postseason. And then you've got the one team that has some legitimate talent, the Steelers, but the Steelers just can never beat the Patriots. So it's the same movie over and over and over again. And of course a bunch of NFC teams who just can't get it done in the postseason either. Just tired of it, man. I'm a Jets fan this year, all through and through Jets fan, Bills fan, Jets fan. I've always liked the Bills, but it's going to be strong this year. So yeah, I think that's what the Steelers should do. I think the Steelers should trade Antonio Brown to the Jets. And if he ruins their locker room, I don't care as long as he comes out and plays really well against the Patriots. In other news, Michael Crabtree was officially cut. I mentioned that yesterday. He's one of the guys that could potentially be seeing the free market relatively soon, and it took probably about, 5 hours after the podcast he was released. So we talked about him as an option. I think he's a relatively good option. You've got to use your personnel department, as I said, to try to determine how much of that drop-off in this last year was because of his age and how much was because he had terrible quarterback play. But yeah, I would take a look at him as a 1-year rental. Because again, a lot of people will get kind of confused when I say looking at a wide receiver. I'm not just looking for a number one wide receiver. I'm looking for a guy that can be a number two. And I think it's possible. I think he's in that number two / number three kind of category, which either way still makes him heads and tails better than anybody we have on this team right now. Is he a fix-all? No, but he could be a cheap plug-and-play. We got to get somebody in those spots. And it not everything can be all or nothing. We can't say, well, we're either going to get an elite stud off the edge or nothing, an elite wide receiver that's as good or better than Devontae or nothing, an elite guard, an elite this, or nothing. Because in that case, we just have enough money to satisfy 1, maybe 2 spots, and then everything else just gets draft or nothing. And of course, some things won't get satisfied in the draft because there's just not enough picks, especially if we're just talking about the first few rounds being slam dunks while the rest are basically just crapshoots. Crap shots? A shot in the game of craps? I don't know. I've never played it. Craps shoots? I don't know the proper way to phrase that. So yeah, in a situation where, and there was somebody else who was commenting about one of the mock drafts talking about how cornerback is the most important piece for the Packers. He said it's the most important position on defense, which I would think is very debatable. But even so, what he's neglecting to understand is that maybe CB1 is, but we have a CB1. I think cornerback is important, and I think we maybe do need to address that, although I'm not sure the best way to go about that, whether that's the draft or free agency. But even if we do, we got to remember, we're looking for CB2. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving too much credit to Jair. Technically, he wasn't in the top 32, so maybe he is a CB2, so we need a CB1. I don't know. I'm willing to call him CB1 because he was for most of the year before the team fell apart. I think he has the potential, especially in his second year, so I'm just going to give him that. But we got to just keep things in their proper perspective. Not everybody has to be elite or bust. Now, my gripe with the Ted Thompson picks is that you get guys that aren't even better than the guys we already have. They're basically just washed up garbage. And it's not worth spending any money on these guys. When we went out and just picked all those 49ers players like Quentin Dial was never good at anything. What did he provide us ever? There was no purpose to that whatsoever. And there were so many guys that we could get for the same amount of money that are better. What was the point of that? I don't know. I don't understand what any of that was. But regardless, Crabtree isn't a Quentin Dial thing. It's a matter of he's either going to be like low-end wide receiver 1 to, I would say, like low-end wide receiver 2. But again, even if we get the washed-up version of Michael Crabtree, he's going to be probably better than anybody we have. And I know, as Packer fans, we want to say, no, I think, you know, we want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But again, these guys were late-round wide receivers who played like late-round wide receivers. And to expect them to make a massive jump in year 2 is just being somewhat unrealistic. It's not impossible, but there's no real logical reason to assume that Marquez Valdez-Scantling, as tall as he is and as fat as athletic overall as that guy is, for him to go that late, there's obviously concerns with his play as a football player. If anybody expected him to be a wide receiver 1 in the NFL, he would have gone in the first or second round. His skill set is through the roof. You very rarely see anybody with his, you know, height, weight, speed. He and Equanimeous St. Brown fell down the board because people had concerns about their ability to play in the NFL. So anyways, it's definitely worth a look. Not saying I'm desperate for him, I'm absolutely not, but he's not a non-option, that's all I'm saying.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built-for-us.
Some other NFL news. There was a report that came out that the competition committee, which I don't think I've ever heard a report that had to do with the competition committee in which it was a positive report, but there may be a new rule that limits celebrations again. This time it has to do with players coming off the bench. This reminds me a lot of being a parent because it reminds me of every single day when my 2-year-old daughter is crying that my 4-year-old son is smiling at her. And I just, first of all, I'm dumbfounded because on one hand, I'm looking at my daughter saying, why is that making you cry? You need to grow up because that's nothing to cry about. But then I have to look at my son and say, why are you smiling in her face if it's making her cry? Stop teasing and go away. Both of you are being dumb. Both of you should be ashamed. Now walk away from each other. Don't look at each other. Get away from each other. Both of you are wrong. It's exactly how I feel about this. Number 1, act like adults for the first time in your life. Deep down, I don't care about how you want to celebrate. I'm just dumbfounded as an adult. The idea that we're going to go out and act like these football players act. Like, oh man, let's go run out onto the field and act like we're 7. Dude, you guys look so dumb. Nothing about this is awesome or cool or, hey, let's do a line dance together. Ooh, let's do a little dance routine. Oh, I know, let's do sack races. Oh, I know, go back to the sideline, we're trying to play football. Oh my goodness. You bunch of dummies. There used to be a time that this was a sport that was played by a bunch of men. There were violent guys with blood streaming down their face with teeth getting knocked out who just wanted to go on the field and hurt people. Now we got these multi-millionaire little divas who want to go out and do dance celebrations and look really cute in front of the camera. You're pathetic. Go away. But again, if that's what you want to do, okay, fine. I think you're all a bunch of dummies. But whatever makes you happy in life, be sure to throw it up on your Instagram, little girl. But, you know, hey, nice touchdown. But then on the other hand, the NFL constantly nitpicking everything. I don't mind if you want to enjoy it or complain about it like I am. Have whatever opinion you want on stuff. Why does everything need to be a law? I don't like that. Therefore, you broke the rules. Therefore, we're talking about fines and we're going to do this. Just leave them alone. They're dumb, but let them be dumb. Who cares? Why can't the NFL and Roger Goodell and the competition committee and the coaches who are complaining about it and everybody else, why can't you just sit there and shake your head and then, you know, when they come to the sideline, you look at them with that face of disappointment? Like, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with your head? You know we're trying to play a football game here? Do you know we're on a little bit of a time crunch? Maybe you shouldn't be expending your energy running off the bench onto there so you can go around and do a little dance routine. Maybe we're trying to get another play up here. Maybe instead of that, you come over by me and we talk about what to do on the next series. Maybe that's a little bit more important than you acting like a goofball. Grow up. Maybe just do that as opposed to running to mommy and daddy and say, oh, they're dancing. I want you to make a rule that they're not allowed to dance. Just, if you don't like it, talk to your guys and tell them to not do it anymore. Everything needs to be this big rule and we gotta change the universe to conform to the way I like it to be. Just let them do whatever they're going to do. If you want to put a time limit on it, put a time limit on it and throw a flag for delay a game or something. I mean, if they're out there just taking up too much time, I don't know. I mean, there's a normal time thing, right? We got to get the next playoff by this time. If you're trying to do a kickoff and somebody's still over there doing their, you know, their little Irish dance in the end zone, fine. Maybe you can throw a flag for delay a game because you're literally delaying the game. But we don't need a rule. We don't need more rules. I want the AAF to succeed so badly because of this garbage. Stop making new rules. Go away. Leave people alone. Just be an old curmudgeon like me and complain about it. You don't need to create rules every day. Not everything needs to be a brand spanking new law. There's one thing I know for certain. It's that Roger Goodell is not a libertarian. That's for sure. And anybody that would vote for him for president is an idiot. Because he would be a Fidel Castro-style dictator day one. Everything I don't like is against the law. Everyone I don't like goes to prison for however long I feel like they should go to prison. And if I do like you and you break the law, then maybe you don't have to go to prison. Maybe I'll just look at you and say you shouldn't do that, and we'll just pretend it didn't happen. NFL is so ridiculous. You guys just loosened up the rules on the celebrations. And as much as the celebrations are dumb, it was the right decision. Everybody seems to like the fact that it was the right decision. And you just want to double down on it. Like, we did the right thing, everybody seems happy, but I just can't help myself, man. We need more rules. NFL's ridiculous.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We get all hyped up thinking we're going to get some high-value Jordan Love card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view on all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy slab packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And honestly, the best thing for me and my son is the fact that we're kind of novices into this. When I walk into a card shop with my son, and a card says it costs $40, kind of just taking his word for it that that's a good value. So I appreciate the transparency on grading, as well as just getting excited about seeing what you could potentially get. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/packdaddy. Wow, that's crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's 40 bucks right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/packdaddy for 10% off your first purchase.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Looking at the Green Bay Packers now, Mike Silver had made some comments about the Green Bay Packers and who he expects to be back. I tend to think he's just parroting Tom Silverstein. In other words, his source, or, you know, his source of information is not the Green Bay Packers organization. Obviously, nobody within the Green Bay Packers organization is telling anybody anything. So when he says the Packers are expected to do this or not expected to do that, he's talking about expectations based on what he's hearing from Green Bay Packers media, and Green Bay Packers media knows exactly what you and I know. In other words, they're forming their decisions on the same basis that we're forming our decision. So I'm just bringing that up because when you hear Silver, says the Packers would like to re-sign Clay Matthews and not Randall Cobb, this has nothing to do with anything the Green Bay Packers are actually talking about. I'm 98% sure that that's the case. If he has a source within the Green Bay Packers that's talking about them wanting to move a player or not move a player, that's pretty intriguing information. And I'm not saying it's impossible, because if you're going to be talking about these things, if you're going to be calling saying you're trying to move, I mean, this is what we heard previously, you know, last year when they were talking about wanting to trade Randall Cobb. These are people saying that they've heard actual conversations, or not heard conversations, but knew that there were phone calls being made about Randall Cobb. That's a different thing than what Mike Silver's talking about. So in other words, let's, instead of talking about Mike Silver, who's a national guy who just parrots things that he hears from local guys, let's actually look at what Tom Silverstein had said on PackersNews.com. He made a list of guys that he said shouldn't be back in Green Bay and a list of guys he thinks should be. Here's the list of guys that he said should not be back. Nick Perry, Kentrell Bryce, Jimmy Graham, Jason Spriggs, Randall Cobb, Byron Bell, Justin McCray, Lucas Patrick. So right out of the gate, Nick Perry makes sense. The biggest problem there is the financial obligations the Packers have to Nick Perry, which then is going to come down to, as I've said, as bad as he played last year, it's not even possible. I shouldn't phrase it that way. It's nearly impossible that that is his level of play now. I don't know what happened. I don't know if that's injury. I don't know what it is. But if we just look at his body of work and average it out, you should not be looking at 2018 as his average, as what we would expect in 2019. If it is, definitely, I don't care what the cost is, get rid of him. Because he was literally the worst edge rusher on the entire team. He was worse than Reggie Gilbert. He was worse than Fadel Brown. But just to be clear, in 2017, he was the 39th best pass rusher, which isn't good, but I would almost rather compare him to that, sort of like a decent second edge rusher. You know, a guy that can at least set the edge a little bit, pretty good against the run. And that'll be up to the personnel department. I don't know what the problem is to evaluate what went wrong. Was it the absolute lack of accountability with that? Because it wasn't, I mean, it was everybody at the pass rush position that just played like garbage. And remember who their coach was. It was a guy that was promoted to assistant head coach who was a little bit crazy. And I just feel like there was zero accountability. And I don't know how much help they possibly could have gotten. So the question is, now that we have a outside linebackers coach and his only job is to coach the outside linebackers, not the linebackers as a whole, not the linebacker slash assistant head coach guy, I'm talking about outside linebacker coach, somebody who can get the maximum out of these guys. Even if the maximum for Nick Perry is to be, you know, low-end number one, high-end number two outside linebacker, how important is that for this team? Because we're not getting two elite pass rushers in the draft. That ain't going to happen. We're probably not going to get an elite pass rusher in free agency. I don't even know how many are going to be available, if any, that can be 3-4 outside linebackers. But to be clear, we save almost $0 by cutting Nick Perry. We owe him... So here's the question. Would you want to roll the dice that we can get production out of Nick Perry for $14 million? Or ship him off and pay $11 million? Would you rather pay $11 for him to not play or pay $14 for him to play? To say it's a foregone conclusion that Nick Perry's gone, I think is silly. We're saving $3 million out of $14 million. I don't know... At that point, why we don't give him one more year to see what our outside linebacker coach can do. Look what he did for Dee Ford, a guy that was complete trash for like 4 years, suddenly becomes one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Everybody talked about his attention to detail and how he crafted things specifically for a guy's skill set. Nick Perry has talent. Is he an elite player? No. Will he ever be an elite player? No. But we've seen the guy be healthy, relatively. We've seen him get double-digit sacks. We know he can be, at the very least, a good edge rush or a good edge setter and a good run defender. So again, the situation is, do you pay $14 million for him to play, or do you pay $11 million for him to not play and save $3 million? And we can cut him next year. Next year we would save $7 million to get rid of him. We actually save some money. But either way, he's due a $4.8 million roster bonus on March 15th. So if Nick Perry is going away, it will be very soon. We're talking 2 weeks. Because there's no way in the world they're going to pay $4.8 million to Nick Perry and then cut him. That's not going to happen. So we're going to find out in a couple weeks. But this is exactly what the GM and LaFleur and Mike Pettine and Mike Smith. So basically, especially Pettine and Smith. So many Mikes and Matts. But Brian Gutekunst needs to sit down with Mike Pettine and Mike Smith, who need to sit down and discuss Nick Perry. Because we're not saving hardly any money for Perry. And I think the odds of us being able to trade him are almost zero, because he hasn't been very productive at all. And the team that would take him on would take on the remainder of his salary, which is $5.2 million this year, $9.6 in 2020, and $9.4 in 2021. Nobody wants to pay that for Nick Perry. So anyways, this is kind of getting to be crunch time, and this is why you're going to start to see a lot more news, because in March you've got a lot of bonuses that are going to be coming out, and it's not just Nick Perry. There are other Packers that this includes, but... Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a long and hard look at Nick Perry than a lot of people are saying. And one of the people that Tom Silverstein outlines as somebody the Packers might keep is Clay Matthews, which I think an argument can be made for that. But to say that Nick Perry's gone and Clay Matthews might stay, I would almost put it the other way around, even though Clay Matthews did definitely play better than Nick Perry last year. I think when you look at the situation that Clay Matthews is not under contract, and that he would require a brand new contract, whereas Nick Perry already has a contract in place. I don't know. But we'll see. I could definitely understand why the Packers would move on from him. But again, it just comes down to what that conversation is going to sound like. If they believe Nick Perry can bounce back, he's going to stay. If they think that what we saw to Nick Perry is just him, that he's just no good, that he's just washed up, he'll be gone, even for $3 million, even for no million. Because remember, even if we only save $3 million this year, we're saving all of $14.3 million in 2020 and all the $14.1 million in 2021. That's the benefit of not keeping him around. That's $14 million off the books in the next 2 years. So you just got to make the right decision. The question is, what is going to be the right decision? And that's going to come down to Pettine and Smith. So anyways, let's move on with his list here. The next guy he lists is Kentrell Bryce. I don't necessarily disagree. I think it makes me nervous because of the lack of bodies we have. It also seems relatively unlikely just because of the fact that Mike Pettine right out of the gate said, I want Kentrell Bryce to be the starter. Maybe, like I said, that has more to do with the guys that we had just being no good and him just really not liking Josh Jones. But it also could have something to do with him liking Kentrell Bryce. The problem is he's a free agent and is going to require a new contract. It's not going to be a big one, but do you want to reinvest in Kentrell Bryce? So it's a tough decision. We've got Tremont, who's not a safety. We've got Ibrahim Campbell, who showed kind of something. We have Josh Jones, who maybe could take a leap in year three, but hasn't done anything in 2 years. Otherwise, we got Raven Green, who hasn't done anything. Eddie Pleasant hasn't done anything. Trey Matthews and Jason Thompson, who haven't done anything. Obviously, they haven't even played for us. So there's just nobody, which is why safety is such a dire thing, and it's why I've been banging the drum so much. So I can understand where he's coming from there with Kentrell Bryce. And I don't think you want to get necessarily into the spot where you have to re-sign somebody just because the talent we have is so terrible or because we just don't have the body. Don't allocate money to players you don't think are worth the money that you would have to pay him. Is Kentrell Bryce worth a new contract? The answer is no, so I would agree he probably should go. The fact of the matter is, as much as, for whatever reason, Kentrell Bryce was the starter for a large portion of the year, Josh Jones played much better than he did. Ibrahim Campbell, for his limited amount of snaps, as I've said, he graded out as it's only 114 snaps before he ended up on IR. But, I mean, we're talking about a potential... I don't even want to say it because it sounds so ridiculous. But he played well enough to easily be a starter and a very good one at that. The question is how much of that was just small sample size and him having, you know, a couple good games. I don't know. But when you have Ibrahim Campbell, that showed out pretty well. Tremont Williams is better at safety, although not great. Josh Jones is better at safety. Will Redmond... very limited sample size, but even he played better in his small sample size than Kentrell Bryce. Kentrell Bryce was terrible.
So no, he's not getting a new contract. And even the limited guys that we have, they're still better than Kentrell Bryce. He lists Jimmy Graham as going bye-bye, pretty similar to Nick Perry. There's also already been reports. And by the way, this isn't his expectation. This is what he believes the Packers should and shouldn't do. So there's already been reports that they're going to keep Jimmy Graham. There's nothing 100% confirmed about that. I don't know where that report came from or what the backstory is there, but we'll have to see. Either way, again, it's going to come down to the coaching staff taking a look. Matt LaFleur in particular as the offensive guy. Justin Outen, the new tight end coach. They're going to have to get together and do the exact same thing all over again. Analyze how the Packers used our tight ends and kind of look at it and say, okay, this is what they did right. This is what they did wrong. Let's take a look at him and see if he's somebody we want to hang on to. Can we salvage this? Can we make something of him? Or is he just washed up? We're also going to find out with Jimmy Graham relatively soon, March 15th, $5 million roster bonus. So if he's going somewhere, whether it be trade or cut, it's going to be pretty soon. But if we did, there's some maybe possibility that we could trade him. The biggest problem is 2020, he's due $7.5 million. This year is $3.4. So really, I mean, if you look at it for 2 years, you're getting the guy for about $5.5-ish million a year for 2 years. That's a pretty decent situation to be in. The problem is, I don't know if a team's going to want to pay him 7.4 in 2020. But the Packers would save $5 million to cut or trade him, and then would save the full 11.6. And that's kind of the big thing, is in 2020 he's completely off the books, and $11.6 million. And next year, as I've talked about, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to cost us a lot of money. Devontae Adams is going to cost us a lot of money. Kenny Clark is going to be getting a very, very big contract. So any opportunity we have, Nick Perry, Jimmy Graham, to completely offload our books for next year, guys that are supposed to be getting paid big money that we can just do away with, let's just do it. So I would probably agree with the Jimmy Graham thing. I don't really know. I think we can squeeze better value than we got out of him last year. But just looking at how he failed, it wasn't just that we used him improperly. We had him in blocking instead of doing this or that or the other. I mean, they're just the drop passes and just the lack of focus and concentration. The stuff that he's supposed to do, boxing people out and catching with his hands, he just couldn't do that kind of stuff. So I don't know. Again, reports are we're going to keep him. I would not really be all that sad if we decided to get rid of him. We need help at tight end, but I don't know if Jimmy Graham's going to offer us very much as it is. But we'll see. Whatever. You mentioned Randall Cobb. We've already talked about that. Pretty sure he's probably going to be gone, and for relatively good reason. It is going to be another question, though. First of all, how much would he be willing to come back for? But beyond that, if we look at this past year with the injury and the year before without Aaron Rodgers, and if we decide, let's set those aside for a moment, if you erase those 2 years, he's had success. Now, I know you can't just completely erase it, but it's not as though he had full health and Aaron Rodgers all year for the last 2 years and just couldn't hack it. Again, the question is, if we have Aaron Rodgers for the year, and we've already heard what Aaron Rodgers has said about what Randall Cobb does for this offense and how beneficial it is for the offense when he's on the field, and then we have Randall Cobb back and healthy, what do we think he gives us? And if Randall Cobb says, sure, I'll do $4.5-5 million, I mean, are you going to say no to that? Again, it just comes down to the coaching staff evaluating his play, looking at the poor play and saying, is that a result of not having Aaron Rodgers? Looking at the poor play this past year and saying, is that a result of his injury? Was he losing half a step because he was hurt? Or is he just not have it anymore? I don't know. The other thing I found interesting with Silverstein saying guys that shouldn't be back, he lists three guards. Byron Bell, fine, good, great. Justin McCray and Lucas Patrick. I don't know who he wants playing guard. I guess Nico Siragusa is just our starter now. That's just, for Tom Silverstein, that's just what we're doing. I disagree on McCray, and I hate to be the one to defend McCray, as I have been for the last couple days. But, you know, Justin McCray, again, is about as good as Lane Taylor. At least he's kind of evolved into that. I don't know, maybe he'll regress again. I who knows? But he's in 2 years, he went from being horrific to being, you know, pretty average, which is what Taylor is. And now you want to get rid of him and Bell, which, again, great. And Lucas Patrick. And also, by the way, we're getting rid of Jason Spriggs. I don't get who we're going to be playing with. If Bulaga goes down, who's coming in at tackle? Who? I mean, I get that you don't like Jason Spriggs, but he's, as far as I'm concerned, at right tackle, he's the only option we have. And also, I think too many people look at 2017 Jason Spriggs and say he's horrific. Nobody wants to acknowledge that he did take a step and get a little bit better. Is he a liability? Yeah, but nowhere near as big of a liability as, I don't know, Gerhard DeBeer would be. I don't know who we're supposed to be playing at these positions. All we have left are Alex Light to play tackle as a backup behind the oft-injured Brian Bulaga, and Nico Siragusa, who couldn't even make the active roster for the Baltimore Ravens, is going to have to come in and start day one at guard with Adam Pankey backing him up. I guess I just don't get the thought process. I mean, I suppose you can just say you have to sign somebody in free agency or you have to draft somebody. But if I was compiling a list like this, I would not. At the very least, McCray's not going anywhere. And Jason Spriggs, again, wasn't great, but we're talking about the 48th best pass blocker in the NFL. As a backup right tackle, I don't know that I'm just going to cut him outright. That sounds to me like a pretty legitimate second tackle as far as pass blocking goes. And as far as run blocking, he was 45th, which is the second best run blocking tackle on the team, ahead of Brian Bulaga. And again, that was from year one to year two. Year one, he goes from one of the worst in the NFL to 48th best pass blocker and 45th best run blocker. If he can take even a half a step forward again, maybe we got something. Again, this was a second round pick. It's actually his fourth year, but whatever. So he takes a step, and so 2016, he's horrific. 2017, he takes a step, but is still a really bad pass block. 2018, suddenly he's serviceable pass blocker, serviceable run blocker. And now we're going to cut him and have no depth whatsoever. And again, it's not going to cost us a lot, so whatever. I absolutely disagree with McCray. I absolutely disagree with Sprigg. Cutting them, to me, is silly. Should not, cannot cut Spriggs. Should not, cannot cut McCray. Do I want either of them starting? No, but you can't cut them. Anyways, a few guys that he says he thinks should be back. Clay Matthews, which is very surprising. I'm not really sure I've heard anybody say that we should bring back Clay Matthews. I mean, if you just look at his career, I mean, he had a really good year in 2017. But if you kind of, and I know this is, you got to give him credit for 2017, but if you don't look at 2017, this guy has not been a good pass rusher since 2012. Nick Perry was good in 2017. In other words, he just had a big drop-off. This isn't just a big sudden drop-off for Clay Matthews. 2009, he was good. 2010, he was good. 2011, he was very good. 2012, he was very good. Since 2012, average, barely good, average, terrible, real good, and then average again. He has been a subpar pass rusher, again, since 2012. And even in 2017, the biggest reason that he was a good guy off the edge is because of his ability against the run. For some reason, he was just an animal. Nobody could get around him. Nobody could block him up, but he can't get after the quarterback. So I don't know where we're coming from with re-signing Clay Matthews. I mean, maybe, but it's going to be for dirt cheap, and I don't even know what the upside of that is. What is the benefit of that? What are we getting out of him? What is the best case scenario? Even if he can stay healthy for 16 games, what are we paying for? I mean, I got love for Clay Matthews. He's been a Packer for a long time. He's done a lot of awesome stuff. If he could finish his career here, that's great. But outside of just charity, what is the benefit of re-signing Clay Matthews? I have no idea. So I'm going to go ahead and disagree with Silverstein on that one as well. He wants to keep Montrevious Adams. There's no question. He took a massive leap. Actually, why is this even on the list? Montrevious Adams is under contract for like two more years. I think we should bring back Montrevious. You mean you think we should just randomly decide not to cut him? Who made this list? Did Silverstein actually say that we should not cut Montrevious? He's literally under contract through 2020. What am I doing? Am I wasting everybody's time with this ridiculous list? Because I'm starting to think this is like a joke. He lists Fade Ol' Brown as somebody we should bring back. I don't know why. He was terrible. I mean, okay, sure. Fade Ol' Brown comes back. Clay comes back and Perry leaves. This is a very weird list. Ibrahim Campbell, yes, again, based on what he did. Again, very small sample size, but I am very interested to see what he can do. He basically played, just to be a little more specific, he played three games, week 11, 12, and 13. All 3 weeks, he played as a free safety. The first week, he played in a limited capacity, only 13 snaps, 12 of which were in coverage. He ended up with two tackles, got a pretty good tackling grade. One of them was a stop, which is a tackle that is considered a loss for the offense. And was only targeted once, one reception for 6 yards, passer rating 91.7. Next week, in week 12, they up his snaps to 53 total snaps. on the defense. 18 of his snaps were against the run, 35 were in coverage. He ended up with 7 tackles, which is pretty incredible. You figure about 50% of the time the defense or the offense was running and he was on the field, he made the tackle. So pretty incredible there. 3 of those tackles are considered stops. Again, 1 target, 1 reception for 2 yards, this time 79.2 passer rating. The very next week, week 13 against the Arizona Cardinals, 46 total snaps, 21 against the run, 1 pass rush, and 24 snaps in coverage. He ended up with another 6 tackles, 1 assist, 1 stop. In addition, he had a forced fumble, and then again, only 1 target, 1 reception, this time for 12 yards. So he showed out real well. Tackling machine, stopped everything that came at him, forced a fumble, 5 total stops on 112 total snaps, only 3 targets, 3 receptions for a total of 20 yards, 94.4 total passer rating. So he had a good series of 3 games. The other 2 people, he's listed 2 more guys, Antonio Morrison and Bashaud Breeland. I find it interesting he didn't comment on Jake Ryan because that would help me to understand if this is a good decision or not. But yeah, Antonio Morrison didn't play very well. I did like his aggression. But the big question is, if we're not bringing back Jake Ryan and we don't bring back Antonio Morrison, we just have Blake Martinez, Oren Burks, and James Crawford. And James Crawford and Oren Burks were pretty terrible. So if I can assume that Tom Silverstein would like to keep Jake Ryan on board, which is a bigger question than, for example, Montrevious Adams, who was under contract, then we have Blake and Jake with Oren Burks hopefully taking a second-year step and James Crawford as kind of the not-very-good depth, if we decide to even keep 4. But I don't know the answer to that question. But yeah, Antonio Morrison was pretty terrible for the Packers, so I don't care. I'm fine with that. As far as Bashaud Breeland now, because this is a very, I would almost say contentious thing, and it's one of those things where I'm probably going to overstate things because I think Packer fans are a little crazy on this. As far as corners go, and let me restate this again for those that are not hearing me. The Packers' corners were pretty bad last year. Jaire Alexander was the 30th ranked cornerback, which is good. That's, again, top 32 is good enough. Hopefully he can get a little bit better. Similar to wide receiver, we don't have a number 2. We barely have a number 3. Josh Jackson just barely snuck in there in the top 96 as the 94th best cornerback. Not good. The next cornerback we had was Kevin King. Kevin King was technically below average, which is to say probably in and around the 100th best cornerback. Slightly better than, because the 100th best cornerback was actually Bashaud Breeland. So if I were to put them in order, Alexander was good. Not great, but good. Good in coverage. Mediocre as a run defender. Mediocre as a pass rusher. Josh Jackson was number 2. Thank you, dance party. He was flat out average. He was average in coverage. Bad against the run. Pretty poor as a pass rusher. Next was Kevin King. They didn't give him a rank because he hardly played because, again, he was injured, which is becoming a common theme. He was less good in coverage than Josh Jackson, which is not good because Josh Jackson wasn't great. He was even worse against the run than Josh Jackson, which, again, is terrible because Josh Jackson was pretty bad against the run and was also below average as a pass rusher. The next best cornerback we had was Bashaud Breeland. Again, 100th best. And the reason I keep saying this is everybody seems convinced, oh man, he was really good, we got to bring him back. Dude, he was bad. And his coverage was way below even Kevin King. The only reason his grade was just barely below Kevin King is because his run defense was actually best on the team. His ability to stop the run was, you know, above average. His coverage was terrible. I guess it was bad. Behind him was Tony Brown, who was abysmal. Despite showing flashes, and I agree, there were certain points where he looked really good. It was just terrible overall. Second worst cover guy. Natrell Jamerson had a higher coverage grade than Tony Brown did. And then Devon House is just, I mean, beyond horrible. So that's the cornerbacks. So when the guy wants to argue with me on Twitter about how, you know, Packers need a cornerback, the only reason I disagree with him is because we have so much youth. Bashaud Breeland was not here very long. Not that that super matters, because the fact of the matter is 2018 is very similar to how he played in 2016, which is better than how he played in 2014. 2015 he was good, 2017 he was above average, 2014, 16, and 18, not good. This is Bashaud Breeland. Again, Bashaud Breeland is a big name, so people that don't actually know what Bashaud Breeland has done in his career hear Bashaud Breeland, they're like, oh man, he was really good, we should get him. And then we get him and they remember a couple times when he looked good and they're like, oh man, he was really good, we gotta bring him back. The problem is he's never actually been very good. He was not good last year, and so I don't see it as a necessity to bring him back. Now, the fact that we got him for less than $1 million is awesome. Is he worth less than $1 million? Yeah, sure, I guess. But if we're talking about re-signing this guy to an actual NFL contract, if we're talking about $5-6 million, whatever, no chance in a million years am I offering him any kind of legitimate contract. You want to talk about coming back for another $600,000 for you know, half a year again? You want to talk about $1 million? Yeah, maybe. But I mean, come on, man. I mean, if we're going to spend money on a cornerback, not Bashaud Breeland. He's not a good corner. He's just not. Go after, I mean, seriously, get one in the draft. If we need a corner this bad, if we're not comfortable with Josh Jackson and Kevin King, and we need Bashaud Breeland so bad, then stop telling me we shouldn't draft a corner. We're set at corner. We're either set or we're not. And if the difference between set and not set in your mind is Bashaud Breeland, your mind is broken. I don't know a nicer way to say it. There's something broken with your mind, because that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Bashaud Breeland was horrible last year, as was every single corner on our team with the exception of Jair, who was good, barely starter caliber. That's the situation we're in. And again, I'm not saying we are in dire need of a corner, because Jair can even get better, and actually he was better. He drifted off toward the end of the year. Hopefully, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Hopefully the new coaching staff that comes in can actually turn Kevin King into a pretty good corner. I'm very skeptical at this point that he's ever going to be anything very good. I don't think he was very good when we drafted him. I didn't like Kevin King coming out of college. But, you know, I'm not a scout, so I just kind of kept my mouth shut. I was very disappointed when we made that pick. But, you know, whatever. That's a separate issue. You got John Ledger of the Draft Network saying he was never very good anyways. But, you know, I mean, granted, he is a guy that does this for, you know, a living, and he didn't think Kevin King was a good pick, and Ted Thompson made a lot of really bad picks. But, you know, we'll trust that this was a good one, and it's going to pan out, and everything's going to be fine, and he's not going to be injured for the rest of his career. It's going to be awesome. And Josh Jackson, you know, didn't play very much in college, and he played a different style. He played a lot of zone. We play a lot of press man. We keep putting him in the slot for some dumb reason, even though that's not what he does well. But maybe he's just going to become really good, and maybe Jair's going to get even, I don't know. We need help at corner. That's all there is to it. Get rid of Bashaud Breeland. Bring in a different free agent. Not Devon House. I will just choke anybody. I know nobody would say that at this point, but Ted Thompson, I would never wish violence on Ted Thompson. I love Ted Thompson. But something bad that is not violent should happen to that man for thinking that Devon House was a good option. Like, I don't know, overcook his steak. Something that's mildly uncomfortable. A real expensive one. Like, he pays a lot of money for it. Like, a primo steak, and you just burn it. Burn that thing to a crisp. And undercook the potato. I want that thing like a rock. Burn. Take that, Ted Thompson. That was horrible. That was always horrible. That was never a good decision. But let's get rid of them. Let's give up this idea that undrafted free agent Tony Brown is going to be some kind of a freak. He's the next Sam Shields. Let's kind of put that one to bed. Let's quit with the fairy tales and get serious. Kevin King is not good. Josh Jackson hopefully will become good. We'll see. Bashaud Breeland is garbage. Tony Brown is not good. We have one corner on this team that's pretty good. That's the situation. Our defense is terrible. We have one good corner. No good number two corner. No good number three corner. We don't have a single good safety. We don't have a single good edge rusher. We need a lot of help. And I don't want to try to fix this team if we have a bunch of fairy tales floating around in our brain. That's not going to help anybody. We got to get serious at some point in our lives. So anyways, you know, I understand Tom Silverstein and every Packer fan out there says we got to bring back Bashaud Breeland. We got to bring back Bashaud Breeland. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know, man. Again, it depends on the price. Fine. If you want to bring him back, maybe we can get a 2017 season out of him. In 2017, with the Washington Redskins, back when he was, you know, oh so super good, he was the 69th best cornerback. So maybe we can get like a number three wide or number three cornerback out of him. We can just squeeze that out of him. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Hopefully not 2016, because in 2016 he was 121st best cornerback. So that wasn't very good. But 2017, a number three. That'd be nice. Or if we want to go super fairy tale, in 2015, that one year he was pretty good, he was the 31st best cornerback. So he'll be, you know, about as good as Jair was. Except his coverage wasn't all that great. It was almost entirely his run-stopping ability that made him the 31st best. In terms of coverage, he was the 50th best. But, you know, maybe we can get a guy that's almost that good. Like he was that one time ever in his career. Did I get my point home a little bit? And look, to be honest, it's this kind of stuff that lends credence to the idea that maybe we're a couple of years out. And I think how Brian Gutekunst attacked, because I still don't know. I don't know what he thinks in terms of are we a couple years out or is this an all-in year? If he drops $20 million on a pass rusher, you got to assume this is an all-in year. If he's a little bit more, you know, let's grab a guy here for five, you know, it's a little more of a Ted Thompson-y thing, we might be looking at a GM that's saying we're a couple years out. Because if look, when we started last year, I feel like his philosophy was all in, right? Jimmy Graham and, you know, Muhammad Wilkerson. Boy, oh boy, we're pushing in, man. And he was targeting everybody. He wanted Tremaine Johnson. He wanted Khalil Mack. We were going all in. What happened halfway through the season? He gutted this team. He realized he was wrong. This team isn't ready. We're going to gut it. Anybody that doesn't belong, we're going to get rid of them, and we're going to move on. Maybe his realization at that point was, this team isn't ready yet. This team is a far way off, and there's no point in even doing anything. We're just going to gut this thing and kind of start over, do a little mini rebuild. And I hate to tell you, you don't start a rebuild at the in the middle point of 2018 and finish it by March. Like, okay, we're rebuilt now. Let's go buy everybody. It takes time. It takes a couple drafts. It takes a couple free agencies. It takes a little bit of reworking with the contract situations, cutting a lot of people, signing a lot of people, all this kind of stuff. And again, just looking at the situation, our offensive line is becoming problematic. We have one wide receiver. I don't know what we have at running back anymore. We don't have enough depth. The one guy that we have that's really good is injured all the time. We don't have any tight ends. We've got Kenny Clark on defense, that's pretty good along the defensive line. Mike Daniels took a step back. You know, guys like Montrevious are stepping up, but they're not great. They're good. We don't have a single edge rusher. We have one cornerback. We have no safeties. We have one linebacker that can't decide if he's good against the run, terrible against the run, good against the pass, terrible against the pass. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's terrible. Jake Ryan, I don't know if we're even keeping him or not. So we maybe have one linebacker, we have one cornerback, we have one defensive tackle, and literally nothing else on the defense. Our offensive line is David Bakhtiari and Corey Linsley, and I don't know. I mean, Bulaga's good, but are we even keeping him? And beyond this year, I mean, if this is a multi-year rebuild, Brian Bulaga isn't even included on this list, unless we extend him, that is. We have one wide receiver. We have a quarterback. I'm just saying, there's a lot of stuff, man. It's kind of overwhelming. Yeah, if we get a second wide receiver, that's huge. We still need an offensive line. We still need a tight end. We still have to have conversations about running back. If we draft a pass rusher, that's awesome. What are the odds he's a really good pass rusher? Let's start there. Beyond that, do we have a second one? Who is it? Where did he come from? Do we have good linebackers? Do we have any corners? Do we have any safeties? I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm kind of saying, little worrisome. And I'm kind of curious what Brian Gutekunst thinks of these things. But again, a lot of that's going to come back to the coaching staff. How much of this is Mike McCarthy not knowing what to do? How much of this is the defense kind of just in flux with year one under Mike Pettine not really sure how to handle these situations? How much of the outside linebacker struggles had to do with having a crazy person as your outside linebacker coach? How much can he help the guys that we have? A lot of question marks, but let's just say the idea that we're in a multi-year rebuild is not 0%. It is a percentage higher than zero. It's a very real possibility. And I know everybody thinks we're in win-now mode with Aaron Rodgers, but do you want to push all in this year in a year in which it just seems unattainable and maybe get into the playoffs at the expense of the remaining years of Aaron Rodgers? Or we take a half step, push as hard as we can with the players we have, and then really try to push in 2020? Again, the idea that we're going to try this year, not try this year, it doesn't exist. You're always going to try 100% every year. But the idea that we're going to expend too much, like the Jaguars who have no money left, we're just going to spend everything and ruin the remaining years of Aaron Rodgers because this is the year with the team that I just described to you. This is the team that's ready. And if we just sign one or two more pieces, we're a Super Bowl caliber team. Is that your thought on this? It's not impossible. I think the offense could be there with one or two pieces. I'm concerned about the defense. And primarily, it's going to depend on people's ability to grow. If we have three good corners next year, entirely new defense. If we have one good corner next year, we're in a lot of trouble. Especially if that one good corner didn't take a step and is still like the 30th best corner in the NFL, we're in a lot of trouble. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. You don't know the answer to this. But we'll have to see. The real interesting thing is what is Brian Gutekunst's philosophy here? All right, are we going heavy offense in the draft for once because we're going to make a push to try to highlight the offense? Are we going to continue to try to build this defense? Are we going to go heavy in free agency? Are we going to be conservative in free agency? What are we doing with the guys that are under contract now? Are we going to try to free up money for the future? Like, are we going to cut Nick Perry because it saves money in 2020 so that we have more money the next year? A lot of big questions to be answered. But anyways, I got to get going. Way too long of a rant. I hope you folks enjoy your Tuesday. It's the worst day of the week. I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.